I hope to begin this morning a little mini-series on what we'll call shining lights, different means and aspects of light that we'll read of in Scripture, of course, and that can be applied to our situation and to our seeking to follow the Lord. So this will be, as I say, a mini-series of shining lights, of which the first today will be, not surprisingly, as you'll have gathered already, candle. Power, candle, light. Now we read in verse 8 of chapter 15 in Luke that we read, either what woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, doth not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it. The first thing we see in this brief parable that Jesus teaches here, it's just two verses directly concerning the woman and her missing piece of silver and the search for it and so on. The first thing we see in this brief period is that the candle is not an end in itself. What woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, doth not light the candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it? And when she had found it, that is the missing piece of silver, not the candle, she called her friends and her neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I had lost. The candle is not an end in itself. It may be a great help, it may be a great benefit, but it is a means to an end. Now, this is partly what Lucifer's mistake was, we might say, if we think of him created as an angel of light. And yet we read in Isaiah 14, from verse 12, he said, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? So the name Lucifer means light bearer. One who was created as an angel of light and who is still able to transform himself into the appearance of an angel of light, but having been created with this splendor and majesty, and yet he himself thought, this is me in myself. I am worthy. I am great. And so sought to be greater than God. We read, thou didst have said in thy heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell to the sides of the pit. Now, we'll look, more at Lucifer when we look at starlight, which will be one of our shining lights that we'll look at in future of this series. But if we think of it, that's his mistake, is to believe that the light bearing, or that the power of bringing the light, is an end in itself. It's not an end in itself, it's a means to an end. The candle in this parable is necessary because something is lost that ought not to be lost. And the owner is not content that it should remain lost. She doesn't say, I've still got 9 other pieces. It's okay, it doesn't matter. No, she's going searching for the one missing piece. That's where the candle comes into play. And also, it is necessary, it's a means to an end, because of the comparative darkness in the home. Darkness in the sphere where the desired object has gone missing. There is darkness in the home. Physical darkness, of course, which is why she can't find it. Why should people's houses be a lot more simple in those days? Probably a one-room house, not a huge amount of furniture. Might be stuck in a corner under some of the dust of the floor or whatever. There wouldn't be much in the way of carpeting. There wouldn't be an awful lot of clutter in the way. So it should be a more straightforward business finding a missing coin. But she's sweeping the whole house. She's taking the candle. She's looking everywhere for it because the house itself is dark. There is darkness in the sphere where the object has gone missing. Now, Jesus tells us, of course, in John 3, we read at verse 19, this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. There are plenty of people in this world who are content with the fact that they dwell in darkness. that their very homes are spheres of darkness. They are not bothered at what may be lost in terms of their relationship to the Lord or in terms of something precious that they once had. It's gone. It doesn't matter because the darkness suits them. This is part of the condemnation, Jesus said. Light is come into the world, but they'd rather not have the light because the light exposes everything that is wrong. And rather than have what is wrong put right, they'd rather just have the darkness and have the illusion that, yeah, it's okay, it's no worse than anybody else. And men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. Darkness will never help us to find something which is missing. Darkness will never help you to find anything. People talk about wanting to find themselves. And I want to just sort of find who I am and who I'm meant to be and where I'm meant to be going in this life. Darkness, the absence of the Lord and his light, will never help you find anything. It will only help us to hide it. It will certainly help you to lose it in the first place, but it will never help you find it. It will only help you lose it. It will only help you hide it if it is intentional. There is darkness in this woman's home of a physical kind, so she brings the light of the candle. There may be darkness in our own homes of a spiritual kind for which we need the light of Christ. And the light of Christ that comes into our lives, or if he plants his love in our heart, it is not an end in itself. It is a means to an end. There is a greater end in view. In the parable, the end, the object in view, is to find the missing piece for man. It's not simply to light the candle and say, oh, doesn't it look nice? Doesn't it look pretty? Look at how it lights up the house. The candle is not an end in itself. It is a means to an end. There is darkness and something is lost. The second thing we should notice is that the candle, although created for light, has no light in and of itself. Now, this is something we looked at briefly with the children. I could have sat the candle there on the table and just stared at it really hard and wanted it to ignite, and it wouldn't do it. It's not going to be able to do it itself. Although it is created for light, everybody who makes candles, and of course people used to make them by the million in days when there wasn't electricity, but everybody who makes candles makes them for the intention of being lit. They are created for light. Even if you could say, oh yes, they're just ornamental candles, but even ornamental candles are intended to be lit. They are created for light, but although the candle is created for light, it has no light in and of itself. But rather, light must first be ignited. You saw me strike the match. Not very successfully the first time. You saw me strike the match and light the candle for the children there a few moments ago. Light must first be ignited from a completely separate external source and then applied to the candle, which has not been designed or intended to give a sudden sparkly, you know, bright coloured infusion and explosion of light and then to fade away. That candle, which is designed for light, although it has no light in itself, is designed once lit to provide a small but steady ongoing light. It has nothing in and of itself. It cannot do it of itself. You and I cannot light ourselves up. We cannot make ourselves receive the light of Christ. You cannot compel heaven to give you that which is in heaven's gift, to give or to withhold. We may be created for God and for his glory, but we cannot compel the light. God must give the light of his love into our hearts. He must ignite it. He must give it. He must apply it. We are just that empty piece of wax with a little wick at the end, which if it is not lit, will stay totally useless in a power cut or in darkness. You've got the candle, but it's not lit. And sometimes I think, well, does that mean all of our lives are useless if they're not given to Christ? Well, they're not serving the purpose for which they are designed. We are there in the darkness, and we may be the equivalent of a candle. We're designed to be lit. We're designed for light, but we haven't got any light ourselves unless Christ applies his light to us. We are not fulfilling a purpose for which we are designed. And we are not designed to be a spectacular firework. We're not designed for 2 seconds of excitement, like some things would in this world seem to be older and all sort of dazzling and then all exciting and then all brilliant for a little while. You know, sometimes, of course, as you get to the end of the year and Edinburgh and other places that have these spectacular firework displays at midnight on the 1st of January. And then everybody will ooh and ah and say how brilliant it is. But then by the time daylight dawns on New Year's Day, everybody's busy sweeping up all the gubbins and the debris, and Princess Street will probably look like a bomb site, and all the bits of firework have to be gathered. It doesn't last. It needs darkness to be spectacular, but it doesn't last. A candle, on the other hand, is designed once lit to provide a small little, we looked at that also with the children, a little light. A small flame, but steady, ongoing light to keep burning, if need be, for hours on end, as long as it is needed. You have a power cut and you light all your candles, and then the power comes back on. Well, if you're sensible, you'll wait a few minutes to see if it lasts when it comes back on. But assuming it stays on, then you put your candles out. You don't keep them forever burning away while you've got loads of electricity and plenty of light. You keep them for as long as you need it, and then you put them out. A candle burns as long as it is needed, for hours if need be, giving out the steady, unblinking tongue of flame. And in its doing so, what is it doing? It's gradually using up all its wax, using up all the body of the candle itself. If I had left that candle on the table, lit in front of the children there, and we'd come back later in the afternoon, it would still have been there, but it would be much, much smaller. Using up all its wax, using up all the body of the candle itself, burning down the wick, burning up the wax, using up and giving out. Eventually, using all of its light-giving ability. Using up all its light-giving ability, because that's how a candle lives. That's what it's designed to do until it flickers and dies. If it was designed for anything else, then it'd be, oh, how sad, oh, how terrible. But that's what it's for. It's meant to burn as long as it's got strength, as long as it's got a body, as long as it's got its wax. It's meant to burn all the way down. If it uses up everything it has to give out light, then its purpose and design has been fulfilled. Of a candle that is burned all the way down to the wick, we do not say, oh, what a waste. We say, rather, well, we've got some good things out of it. It was used for what it was meant for. It gave out light for as long as it was meant to. It's done its work. It's fulfilled its task. That's what it was meant for. Now, if we give a lifetime to the Lord, or as much of a lifetime as he enables us to when he gives us his light, then burning up for him is what we're meant to do. Burning down all the body of the wax, burning up all the way, giving out the light. That's what we're intended for. That is the purpose of why we are designed, is to live for the Lord and shine for the Lord. And eventually, we will have used up everything that we have in this world. Eventually, our body and breath and our heart's ability to keep beating will be spent in this world. But what will it have been used for? It will have been used for exactly what it was designed for. It will have had a purpose. It will have been worth living. A candle will have been worth burning. Its purpose will have been fulfilled. It is created for light, but it has no light in itself, unless that light is ignited by an external source and applied to it. And unless the Lord applies the light of his truth to our hearts, although we are designed for him, we haven't got any of it in ourselves. But our purpose, once we have it, is to keep on burning, to keep on giving out the light, yes, in whatever little heat it might give out. That's what we're designed for. And it it is fulfilled if we do it right to the end. Also, as we mentioned with the children, of course, a candle is for indoors. It's only any use if it's protected by the walls and roof of a building. Take it outside, it'll blow out within seconds. And, of course, ironically, the darkness may be greater inside than it is outside. Perhaps the woman who lost her coin, if she got out into daylight and was able to take everything out into daylight, it would have been clearer. And sometimes, as you know, when the sun's beginning to fade or go down, you could be inside the house, you look out and it looks pitch dark outside, but you go outside, it's not actually quite so bad. There's still a wee bit of light and so on. It can sometimes look worse when you're inside than it does actually is outside. There is sometimes greater darkness inside the house than there is outside. And ironically, although that's true in a physical sense in the parable, contrasting indoors with outside, you know, sadly it may also be true in a spiritual sense. Inside the shelter of the Church of Jesus Christ is sometimes to be found the greatest spiritual resistance and the hardest of hearts toward the graces of Christ. Because if we've heard it all since we were young, and if we've been exposed to all the sounds of the words and the truth and so on, there's nothing new for it to say to us. It still hasn't penetrated our hearts. And of course, the words won't do that themselves. It has to be the Spirit of the Lord. He has to apply it to our hearts. He has to, as it were, invade our hearts. He has to give us that grace of conversion and of his mercy. We can't do it. We can't ignite that light ourselves. But sometimes the resistance is harder from within the Church of Jesus Christ than it is sometimes for outsiders. Outsiders whose lives may have been wrecked by crime or addiction or vice, and who have previously known nothing of the good news of the grace of God. Amongst these, the gospel is often, not always, of course, but often more openly listened to and responded to. You know, not unlike what Jesus says to the chief priests that we see in Matthew 21, at verse 31. He says, you know, "Verily I say unto you, the publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of God before you." And that was the chief priests who lived and worked in and around the temple. And they were surrounded by the things of God, but their hearts were hard towards them. It says, "The publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. For John came unto you in the way of righteousness, and ye believed him not. But the publicans and the harlots believed him. And ye, when ye had seen it, repented not afterward, that ye might believe him." You see, the Lord knows that sometimes those who have never, ever heard his truth, when they hear it, it's like it's fresh and it's new and exactly what they need. Sometimes, outside of the walls, there is more light than inside. And sometimes in that spiritual sense, there is greater darkness inside and greater resistance inside the Church of Jesus Christ in the spiritual sense than outside of it. The shelter of the house ought to provide ideal conditions for the candle to illuminate what is in there. But it is not always so. And this is something we need to recognize. That whilst the light of the candle is designed for inside, sometimes even that light will not penetrate all the corners of the darkness. And sometimes the darkness is deeper inside the walls than it is outside. And sometimes likewise, those who may have been exposed for years to the things of grace may be harder against it than those who are coming to it for the first time. So a candle is for indoors, yes, but sometimes the darkness can be greater there. Also, staying with the parable and the woman's searching of the house, there will be many places where the light of the candle will be brought to, where the missing silver piece is not to be found. You know, we do not read that she lit the candle as soon as she did, "Oh, there it is, right away, on the table. I didn't see it. Of course I should have. There it is, the search is over." Rather, she doth not light a candle, sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it. That means she has to go on and on looking in every nook and cranny and every possible place where it could be. That means there are many places where she goes with the candle, many places she takes the light of the candle, where the silver piece is not to be found. Is that then a waste? We say, well, what a waste of the light of the candle. Man, going in this corner and that nook and cranny up that shelter. And it wasn't there after all. I mean, if I'd only known exactly where it was, I could have gone straight there with the candle. That would have been so much better. Then I could blow it out. And then I wouldn't waste all that wax and all that burning and all that light and so on. Do we say, what a waste? It wasn't there in that corner. It wasn't under that table. It wasn't up on that shelf. It wasn't behind that particular piece of furniture after all. Do we say it's a waste? No. We rather, is that not part of the search? Is that part of the search for nothing? Well, no, because just as the purpose, we think just as the purpose of, you know, what's used as a parable elsewhere in Scripture, the purpose of a vine is fruit. You think of something like, you know, Ezekiel chapter 15, where he talks about the vine. He says, you know, what use is the vine? Is the wood any good for anything? You think of a bunch of grapes. And then when you picked off the grapes, you look at the little twiggy bit of wood you're left with. And, you know, you can't make any furniture out of that. You can't even really make kindling or anything out of it. It's just useless. As wood, the vine is useless. It's too twiggy, it's too thin and spindly. The only thing the vine is any good for is bearing fruit. And if it bears fruit, then that's good, and that's great, and that's what it's meant to do. So likewise, we read in John 15 and verse 5, I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, ye can do nothing. And in verse 8, he that is my Father glorified that ye bear much fruit, so shall ye be my disciples. Now, nobody says, you know, afterwards, or ask, yes, but what gets done with the fruit afterwards? I mean, this bunch of grapes got squashed under somebody's foot. This went into, was made into wine, or this was just eaten as fruit, but that bit got wasted. That bit was given to so-and-so, and they didn't bother to eat it, and it just got all wrinkled up like prunes. What a waste that would be. Is that going to be a problem for the vine? Is anybody going to say to the vine, oh, what a useless vine you are, because, you know, that bunch of your grapes, that got trodden underfoot, and okay, that got used, but this one just withered away because nobody ate it, and that one, goodness knows what happened to it. Is that the vine's problem? No, the vine is just meant to churn out the fruit. The vine is meant to produce the fruit. Whatever gets done with the fruit afterwards, that's somebody else's problem. That's whoever picked it, whoever used it, whoever gave it away, whatever the case may be. That is not the vine's problem. Its job is just to bear fruit. So likewise, it's not the candle's problem if it goes here or there or to the shelf or behind the table or in that corner and the silver piece isn't there. The woman is not going to say, what a useless candle you are. Come on, I looked here and the silver piece wasn't there. I looked up on the shelf, the silver piece wasn't there. I lifted that particular piece of furniture or that cushion and my goodness, the silver piece wasn't there either. What a useless candle you are. That's not the candle's problem. The candle's purpose is simply to give light. It's not the candle that lost the missing piece. The candle's purpose is simply to give light. Nobody can criticize the candle in 9 places out of 10 where the woman seeks with it or shines it. The silver piece is not found. Its purpose is just to give the light, to make the search and recovery more possible. That's its purpose. To give out the light. But of course, and this is the thing we have to remember, the parable is not about ultimately the candle. It's about the woman and her missing silver piece and its ultimate recovery and the joy this causes. The candle is just the means to that recovery. Or part of it. It is not an end in itself. It has been created to help accomplish something. It's been created for a purpose, to give light where there is darkness. It's been created so that it can be lit, so it can burn down all its wax, it can use up all its resources, it can shine. But the parable is not about the candle. It's about the woman. It's about her missing silver piece. It's about its ultimate recovery. It's about the joy this causes. And ultimately, of course, it's about the Lord and his seeking for lost sinners. The story of salvation, the work of God's great grace, is wonderful. Whether it's looking for the lost sheep or finding the silver piece of that's missing and so on, it's wonderful, the story of God's great grace. And if we are willing and prepared to do so, you and I can each have a unique part to play in it. But the story and the part we play and the calling itself is not about us. The story is about Christ. We are invited not to bring Christ into our life and so be all that you can be and so be the person that you should be so that you and I can be bigger and better and brighter and get the most out of life. All these things will in fact happen, but they will be side effects. They will not be the main purpose. The purpose in having Christ in your life is to live for him, to shine for him, to be part of him and to glorify him and his name. The story is about Christ, and it is about how he, by his coming and by his death on the cross and his resurrection on the third day, how he has restored to completeness what was broken and damaged, and by its very incompleteness had produced a sense of shame. Now, the silver piece in question, people speculate about it a lot. It might have been in coin form, it might not have been. You know, when Judas was paid his 30 pieces of silver, it wasn't just all different chunks and bits. It was coins, probably. So this quite possibly may have been coins. It doesn't say explicitly it's coins, but pieces of silver. And the likelihood is, in the cultural context, that it was that which was part of our sort of wedding decoration of so many silver coins, 10 silver coins that a woman would have as part of a kind of headdress, wedding headdress, and they'd all be put on a string, and they would be pierced and strung together, and she'd wear them round her forehead, like a sort of headdress there. And as I think we've mentioned on previous occasions, the monetary value of these silver coins, that was hers. It was hers to keep. It didn't become her husband's property on her marriage. It couldn't be sort of used as part of the family estate. It belonged exclusively to her and to her alone. And yet, if on special occasions, you know, she would be dressed up and wearing this again, you know, and this particular sort of beautification, as it were, of her on a special occasion, if you've got your special headdress and look, oh, there's a gap tooth bit there missing, then we can see that the other nine are there, where's the other one? Then suddenly the shame of having a piece missing, that draws more attention to itself. This, which is meant to be a ceremonial, sort of a beautifying a piece of jewellery, as it were, the gap-tooth appearance of the missing piece would be emphasising what is missing rather than what may still be right, what might still be there. Nobody's going to see the woman wearing a 9 silver coin and say, oh, look, what lovely, 9 silver coins. They say, where's the other one? You might have 10 there. Look, there's one missing. It's like if somebody has a tooth missing at the front of their mouth and they smile, and all you can look at, all you can focus on is the gap, is the missing tooth. That's why you don't say, oh, what a lovely set of pearly whites, just one missing. All the rest are there. Isn't that fantastic? The very fact of the one missing emphasizes what is lost, rather than causing people to dwell. Ah, but how much more is still there? Look at all the rest of it. You know, if a gentleman was to come into church this morning, say, with his jacket and his suit, but there was a sleeve missing, and one sleeve had been ripped off, you wouldn't say, oh, lovely suit there, trousers, a waistcoat, and a tie, and a shirt, it all really works. Okay, there's a sleeve missing, but never mind. The rest of it's beautiful. All you would see is change. There was a guy in church this morning, he had a sleeve ripped off his jacket. I can't believe that. I've never seen anything like that before. You wouldn't look at the rest of his suit. You wouldn't see anything else, you'd only see that the sleeve was missing. Or they came hobbling in with just one shoe on. Say, well, the rest of his outfit was fine, but he's got a shoe missing. You probably wouldn't even notice the rest of his outfit. Say, it was all very smart, it was beautifully pressed and so on. Just, there's a guy in church this morning with a shoe missing. That's all you would see, is that something was missing that should have been there. And this fact of what is missing, this incompleteness, is the shame, the embarrassment. It is the shock. The desperate need is to put right the thing that is no longer there. The incompleteness is itself a source of shame, a source of sorrow, a source of, you know, that which cannot give any rest to the soul until it is put right. The shepherd is not content to say, I've got 99 other ones, it doesn't really matter. And the woman is not saying, I've got 9 other silver pieces, it doesn't really matter. Because they go after the one that is missing, because that very incompleteness is part of the problem. It is the problem itself. And so likewise, we who are created for fellowship with God, we who are intended to be, as it were, in communion with the Lord, in relationship with the Lord, when that relationship is broken, when that gap is there in your life, when that is missing, you can tell yourself as much as you like, ah, oh, but look at all the other things. And I'm like, ah, oh, look at the house and a car and job and money and all the relationships. And so everything's fine, and nice clothes and everything else in my life that's there. But you know there's something missing. And that gap-tooth sense of emptiness, that incompleteness, doesn't just cause a sense of restlessness, it causes a sense of embarrassment. It causes a sense of shame. You don't even know quite why there is this shame, but there is this incompleteness which brings with it this sense of shame, because that's what Adam and Eve felt in the garden, isn't it? They were naked before and they didn't know they were naked and they weren't bothered because they were innocent. But once they had sinned, once there was that separation between them and God, what entered in? Shame entered in. Shame entered in when sin and death came in and we were separated from God. And that great big gulf that is between us and God by our natural condition, that separateness from God which we have inherited from Adam and Eve and their fallen condition, and which we down through all the generations are born and conceived into, this sin, this separation from God, brings this sense of restlessness, of incompleteness, this God-shaped blank in the human heart, which we know no amount of all the world's and its goodies is going to fill. It brings with it this sense of shame in being incomplete, that nobody is really going to point to the other 99 things that are right and say, ah, don't worry about it, great, no problem. All they're going to see is the missing piece. All they're going to see is what isn't there. All you are going to sense is this unfulfilledness, this bitterness of meaninglessness and thinking, what was it all for? Yes, I may achieve, I may climb to the very top of my profession. I may be like Solomon and have riches and power and wealth and all the rest of it, and yet conclude at the end of the day, all is vanity. It's just no use to me at all, because there is that separateness, that lostness from God. That is what this parable is about. Christ has come to restore, to heal, to cleanse. That's what he says, you know, in Luke chapter 4, when he reads from Isaiah 61, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to heal the brokenhearted, to bind up that brokenheartedness, and to heal those things which are sore, to cleanse the lepers, to give recovery of sight to the blind, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord, the time of God's grace. Christ has come to restore, to heal, to cleanse, to make new, and to make whole, to give back the missing piece of your life, the human dignity of being made for relationship with God, being created for God and made for relationship with Him, being made in His image. That incompleteness Christ has come to restore to completeness. He has come to heal. He has come to bind up. He has come to make new. And he has given his light to us. And before he gives us that light, he already surrounds us with the protection, the walls of his love, so that before ever that light is ignited and lit, as it were, in the little wick of our hearts, we are already surrounded and protected by his love. He has already gone before us to protect and shelter us. He's already there. He can't really use, if we can say that reverently, he can't really use puffed up proud hearts. A spectacular firework isn't much use for keeping your house lit in a power cut. It's not much use for searching the dark corners when there's something to find. It may look brilliant in the night sky, but what you actually need to be of any use is the small little flame that'll keep burning. It has to be small enough to be of any use. And that's what Paul says, of course, isn't it, to Corinthians? Look at your calling, brother. Not many high, not many mighty, not many powerful, not many great are called, but rather God has taken the small, the insignificant, the weak. Why do you think it is that Jesus so beloved the little children and said, except ye become as little children, ye shall not enter the kingdom of God? We have to be smaller. We have to be conscious of our smallness, and we have to be conscious that that light the Lord has put in us is able to be shared, intended to be shared, without diminishing what he's given to us. He has given his light to us. He may have given his light to you. And if he does, this is what he says. In Isaiah chapter 60, verses 1 and 2. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the Lord shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. This is really the question then. Is that something that we are conscious of needing? Is that which is missing from our life sufficient to make us want the gap to be plugged, the circle to be complete, the brokenness to be made whole? In other words, I suppose, are you willing to be small enough to let him light? Shine.